Hi, and welcome to Air Graphics Podcast. My name is Ralph Kelly, the owner of Air Graphics, airbrushing in character. This week we have Ergon Yasser of Sydney, Australia. His company name is Tats in Caps.
Are you there?
Hey. Yeah.
Hi, Ralph. How are you?
I'm good.
We finally get to talk.
Yeah, I was in Australia.
It's pretty warm today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we've got good weather here at the moment, so it's going to be a warm couple of weeks because we're in summer.
Oh, nice. I think we're getting ready to hit our spring.
Right, okay. That's a good time of the year as well.
Yeah. So let's get started. Where are you originally from?
Okay, I'm based in Sydney, Australia, and I work from my location, which is in Girraween. And that's out west.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you have any websites or social networks you want to promote?
Yeah, I work for myself, but I do have people that help me out at shows and stuff. My website's called Airbrush Tats and Caps. It's T-A-T-T-S, the letter N for Nelly, then C-A-P-S .com. As well as my Instagram page, which is also called airbrush_tatsandcaps.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So how long have you been airbrushing?
Professionally, I've been airbrushing for the last 17 years, but I did start in, I had a start in 91 when I was first introduced to airbrushing through a friend.
Ah, cool. What airbrush did you start out with?
It was a single action Pache airbrush that I started with. That's what I was introduced to. So it was my Pache. Then I moved on to the double action VL Pache.
Oh, cool. That single action is takes a little work to get to learn the process of it, huh?
Yeah, well, being self-taught, I mean, and just seeing one other person airbrush at the time in the 90s, I just thought that was the thing. I didn't know about double action airbrushes until later on, a few years later, that I got introduced to double action, and that's when I switched over to double action airbrushes.
You with the Pache's now? I mean, you started with Pache's, but now you with the Iwata's?
Yeah, I definitely use Iwata's now. That's my base airbrush that I use. That's the Iwata Eclipse, the BCS, the bottom feed airbrush.
Yeah.
But when I first started doing the hats, I initially started with the Eclipse, the top feed airbrush. But over time, I kept on running out of paint, so I had to switch to the bottom feed one so I could fill up more paint. Because as you know, as an artist, if you keep filling up paint and you're just losing time, and then, you know, you're losing sales.
Yeah. So how did you said you found out through a friend or you saw someone else doing it?
Yeah, a close friend of mine. At that time, I was already into art, and you know, I was into graffiti art. And a friend of mine was a really well-known graffiti artist around my area, and he was the first person that I had seen ever touch an airbrush. And I asked him, "What is that? What is that tool you're using? It looks like a spray can, but it's not." And he goes, "It's an airbrush." Okay, he basically introduced me to an airbrush. At that time, we were at high school. We left school early because I was excited about seeing how this airbrush worked. He took me to his home. He painted a character of Vaughn Bode. It's a type of character that graffiti artists used to follow. And he painted this a little cute cartoon character of a little Vaughn Bode character of a girl onto a little T-shirt. And all he had was, at that time here in Australia, there wasn't airbrush paint that you could sort of go out and get and fill your bottle up and paint with. We had to mix our own colors. So at that time, he had a little range of colors of Liquitex squeezable bottles, and we used to mix that up with water and then spray that through the airbrush. yeah, and that was basically how it started. I seen him paint that character, and I was just blown away. I said, "Man, I got to get myself an airbrush."
But you was a graffiti. You used to do graffiti. That was another one. A question that's going to come up later.
Yeah. I just, in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, yeah, I was heavily influenced by graffiti. I just had a love for graffiti art as well as hip hop. In the 80s, the hip hop era was sort of something I grew up to in, and all that sort of, the four elements. So yeah, that basically introduced me to the love for airbrushing, because it was kind of similar thing to like spray painting, but spraying with a tool.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would convert. I guess we could, as an easy conversion from painting with a can to painting with an airbrush, because it's basically the same style. And I see it carries over into your hats and now.
Yeah, I try and mimic the graffiti style of art with my lettering onto hats, and that's kind of why I just love that sort of feel, like where you can just sort of turn a letter, a basic letter, into like a caricature if you were to think of it that way, and just sort of make a pop on a hat, and it's just the feeling of that graffiti love that I have, that I put into the passion when I paint hats. So
yeah, you definitely have your own style with that.
And yeah,
it makes you stand out more. Like, that's definitely, when you see the hat, you definitely know that you're the one who did it.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, 'cause I know a lot of people probably try to mimic you now, but you can still tell your style.
Thanks, Ralph. I appreciate that. But I mean, I'm all rounded. I can airbrush sort of pretty much anything. If you're thinking about airbrush in the airbrush world, like, I can do portraits, I can do characters, painting hats for me, it's a full-time job. I do it throughout the whole year, and I just basically love what I do, like anyone else.
Yeah. Did you start in a shop, or did you like basically just start your own?
I had to start. Well, in Australia, there was no sort of for t-shirt airbrushing and painting on fabric. There was no
other airbrush t-shirt art. It wasn't really there.
Airbrushing was here, but it was more custom painting, if you know what I mean, more like automotive type airbrushing. But there was no real type of airbrushing where it was sort of people mainstream doing t-shirts and hats and all that sort of thing. So I basically created my passion into a dream. So I opened up a little like a market stand every weekend, and then that's where I started my airbrushing. So I had to basically turn my dream into a passion and a reality, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So where did y'all do y'all graffiti at? Was it like on the walls or trains over there?
I don't like to say, but yeah, it started with the it started on trains and walls. And actually, I do remember doing at school, I used to do title pages for friends that all asked me, can you piece my book, and can you do me a back patch? And I used to use markers and texters just to do graffiti type characters on the back of the denim jackets and all that sort of thing in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. What was you want to say your tag name?
At the time it was Sims, S-I-M-S.
Sims.
But now I just stick to my artist name, my airbrush name, which is Jadier, Jadier. And basically that's the initials of my two boys, my two younger sons, and my first two initials put together.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that's why whenever I quote myself, I say Jadier 1 or Jadier 73. 73 is the year I'm born. So yeah, I use that as my artist name, and Ergen Yasser is obviously my real name.
That's cool. That's cool way to combine everything.
Yeah, that's, I just thought it's got a special meaning to me. It's got my kids' initials with mine put together, and it means a lot. So that's why I I use that on anything, even on my merchandise, on my hats. If my hats are labeled, it's got Judy inside it, embroidered in there, or my business name, Airbrush Tats and Caps.
Yeah. So you did have, you didn't, did you, since it wasn't a shop, did you build a shop, or you just did it out of your home for a while until where you're at now?
Okay. In the late 90s, I just did it casually. I was only airbrushing. I was buying the Airbrush Action magazines, which I was sort of later introduced to in like 94, 95, and then I started just working from home at that time. But it was in 2002, maybe 2003, that's when I opened up a little a market stall, which was on the weekends, Saturday and Sundays, and I worked that store for about 13 years, and that's where basically I got in touch with Pat Gaines and Cliff in the later years before I closed that shop.
Yeah, I remember you came over here.
Yeah, I taught the I was a airbrush instructor at the Airbrush Getaway in 2014, which I was, you know, privileged to do, and you know, run a 1-day workshop on how to attack a hat. And yeah, it was a great experience. I got to meet all my idols and everyone that I ever read about in Airbrush Action magazine, pretty much most of them I got to meet and, you know, actually teach with them. It was just an unbelievable experience.
Yeah, which that was cool.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But, I do remember Pat saying that we're meant to link up and do that like a three-man type sort of gig together, but it never fell through. So
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The where were you when you came down here? Where was your class at?
The first time I came, because I went twice. I did.
You were here, or the second time you were here?
The first time I taught at the Tropicana in Las Vegas.
Oh, that was nice.
It was nice. It was a big experience for me because I've never been to Las Vegas at all. So that was a big culture shock. And especially meeting Cliff Stiglitz from Airbrush Action, at him picking me up at the airport, and in the car was Terry Hill and Gary Worthington. I was just mind blown.
Yeah,
it was just like amazing. Like, these were the guys that I read about, and I couldn't believe the magnitude that it had, the impact it had on me. It was just unbelievable. But yeah, I got to share that experience with them and become good friends.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the second time that I did go was in 2016, and that was at the Golden Nugget in Vegas again.
Oh, cool. So did you like Vegas?
I actually loved it. Like, I like any part of America. I you know, like, New York was really good, but yeah, Vegas was interesting. I got to meet a lot of good friends that I'm still friends with now that are in the airbrush industry. Obviously, you know, Chino and, you know, all the boys from Airbrush Las Vegas. I'm really good friends with pretty much anyone that I met in America. But I have a good friendship with Chino, probably more than the airbrush artists that I speak to on Facebook.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You thought about moving over here, or you just love it over there too much?
It's not that I wouldn't move to America. I just have a lot of family and friends here. You know, it's a big decision to make to actually move there permanently. But for a working holiday, yes, I'd definitely go any time of the year.
Oh, that's cool. It I guess it has its perks. It has its plus ups and downs, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's a holiday. It's like a working holiday. Like, you couldn't complain. I mean, get to see another part of the world. It's, and you know, just the dynamics of other artists, meeting new people, friends. It's an experience, you know. Like, I mean, that'd be like me asking you if you'd love to come to Australia. I mean,
man, I've seen some of those videos of Australia, like those big old spiders.
It's probably over exaggerated, but I mean, yeah. We have spiders. Like, anyone has spiders. Las Vegas has got, Arizona's got rattlesnakes. We don't have rattlesnakes.
So. Yeah, true story. They show those videos, man. I know they like show like the big old muscular kangaroos, or they show those big old giant spiders.
Yeah, but they're not in the areas that I live in. I mean, yeah, those sort of things are out in the country, you know, more out in the bush. Yeah, they're not in the inner suburbs of Sydney. Sydney's kind of like New York, a miniature New York.
Okay. So it's like really, really modernized over there. I don't know why we would think it was like not modernized, but yeah. So, do you paint alone now? Do you have do you work with yourself or do you work with other people?
I only do everything that's done in-house, like all my hats and everything that I do, it's all alone. Like, I don't have, like, if I do a show, I may call in another artist to help me out. But all the characters that you see and all the lettering that you see that I post up, it's all done by me.
Okay, do you pre-make all of your stuff before you
Absolutely.
Go?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the big key with me, because our gigs are sort of like spread out throughout the year, and I sort of allocate time where I can paint. I might paint 2 months straight, and that might be just painting stock. So the more stock I have, the more ammunition I have, and, you know, it makes just when I get to a show or an event a lot easier. That way I can just add a little name to the side of the hat, and it's done.
Yeah. I think it was Chino I talked to about. They make all the pre-makes.
And, well, I have to admit, I introduced that to the world, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah, and none of until I got to America, nobody was doing pre-made hats. And I didn't even think people were painting hats the way I was. You know what I mean? When I taught my class, that was one of the things I taught. I told them to paint some stock. Make sure you got stock on hand, because people do buy them. Even if you paint separate things on the day, you got other things to sell while, you know, you're painting the custom sort of things on the day.
Ah, so you brought that. Because I always wondered about how the...
If you look at all those stores... I'm not going to name any names, but if you see pre-made hats, I mean, it basically, I'm not saying I invented it, but I was pretty much involved in bringing it out to the mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great idea too, because I was always scared to have pre-made stuff, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why, but it just adds to sales, you know, like, because I was, initially, when I first started, I was just painting hats, and I was just there painting what I could on the day. But then I'd miss out a lot of sales throughout the day because there was no stock for people to buy other than what I could paint. So I thought of a system where I paint. Initially, I had maybe five. At the time when I was just doing lettering, when it was just words on hats, I'd just paint the mainstream words like hip-hop, dance, swag, all those sort of things. And I'd paint a variety of different styles and different type of color combinations. And I used to hang the hats on the walls. And at that time, my staff would just sell them as an accessory. So while I'll paint a custom hat, those other hats would sell. And, you know, they'd bring in a certain percentage of my income. Then I started saying, hey, why not paint a bunch of hats? So I got to the point where I was painting 200 or 300 hats and I have them on the wall. By the end of a show, like if I did a 12-day event, all those hats would sell as well as what I could paint on the day. So I just brought in extra income.
Wow. That is very
smart. I do that till this day. I still do that to this day. I still paint pre-made hats. And when I go to an event, I hang them hats up as well as what I can paint on the day.
So how do you know what's popular? That's the thing I was used to ask, you know. How do you know what's popular to put out?
You get a feel for it after you do it for
popular.
After you're doing certain amount of events throughout the year, you sort of get an idea as to what to paint and what's popular and that. But for example, if I do, let's say I do a Comic-Con event and it's a 2-day event here in Australia, which is on a weekend, I know that I've got to do all the, you know, the Marvel characters, the DC type of characters. And then I'd put in sort of gamer hats where, you know, your Roblox, your Minecraft, all that sort of thing. And now what is popular also is the anime type characters. So we've been doing a lot of the anime type characters as well. But you get a feel for it over time. The events that you do, you know what sort of sells and what doesn't. So you would do a lot more of what would sell, and then you do a lot less of what wouldn't sell.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would always have a problem with that but customers do always keep you updated, you know?
Yeah, they're the main, you have to listen to your customers. Yeah, absolutely. If you don't listen to them, you'll be, you'll be working backwards.
Yeah, left behind because you have
Yeah, to... exactly. Left yeah, behind.
Yeah, that's what to I was keep saying. Up or get left behind, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and I'm on the forefront. I'm always hearing what's trending, and I'd work with Chino. I'd tell him, listen, man, we need this stencil. Can you make that? And he'll make it, and then I'll paint it, and it absolutely sells. So I mean, in the last 8 years, when I met Chino at the Airbrush Getaway, I was not doing stencil type work characters at all. It was just all my graffiti word type, you know, hats and stuff. It wasn't until I met Chino that he introduced me, hey, why don't you paint some characters? And from there, I introduced that into the royal shows that I have here. And they've just taken off like a wildflower.
Wow.
I used to do, let's say I did 20% of stencil work. And now my volume of hats are more like 80% of stencil work. And they're all Chino stencils.
Yeah, that's a question that was coming up later on about it. It's And you know what? I think, you know, like Chino would be considered like the person who, how can I put it? Like the forefront of the stencils. I mean, everybody did stencils, but it was like Pellet, or it was like the way Chino does stencils now is like, I think it was the forefront of a lot of people, like how they use stencils now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with stencils, I mean, there was always the, you know, the art tool type stencils where you can just sort of, you know, had shapes and stuff. But when I met Chino, I said, listen, if we do a character, can we not just sort of have it like a stencil where you just spray it and then you just pull it off and you just got the markings of the stencil? I asked him if we could sort of make it into a stencil where you got the shape of the character. So when you spray around it, you don't just have like a square box. You have the shape of the character. Then you can follow it. Yeah, and it just brings it more to life. I mean, and then obviously you do got to have a little bit of skill, like just to airbrush the detail inside the stencil, not just sort of spray a stencil and there you go, there's an airbrush hat. I mean, when I do Chino stencils, I put a lot more work into what I paint because, I mean, I consider it like just doing a lettering.
So you basically worked with Chino. Y'all worked it out together. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. I often... Chino would ask me if, you know, what's trending over there and what are you selling a lot of? And I'll help him out by telling him what's selling. Maybe I'll screenshot an image. I say, listen, make this stencil and he'll make it. I mean, he hasn't got any issues. Like, he's a top bloke. He'll just make something. If I ask him at any one time, if you could make me a stencil, he's on it. You know, he's on the ball. Like, he'll make it. And, you know, from there, just, you know, I speak to Chino more than I would some of my airbrush friends. So it's just amazing. I mean, his wife, Diana, did my class, but I speak to Chino more than I do Diana.
Yeah. And I mean, Chino's cool. I like Chino.
Yeah, he's a top bloke.
Yeah, yeah. So do you, how many, is it like a lot of competition over there for you? Like, is a lot of other artists?
When I started, there was nothing. Like, really, there was really good artists that did the automotive industry, but there was nothing in my sort of field where it was more the fabric and clothing type sort of area. But now obviously, you know, like over time, you know, the interest has evolved. People are more on social media and they're seeing a lot more of airbrushing on social media. There are other artists and other teams of artists that airbrush here in Australia, which is good for the industry. You know, I can't be the only one to paint airbrush hats, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's always a great thing. You don't have to worry about competition, but I don't think you have to worry about competition anyway.
I don't see it that way. I mean, if I was to think about other people coming in and airbrushing and me not having a job, if I thought of it that way, I mean, I'd be long gone by now. I wouldn't be painting. And I paint because I love it. I paint because I know what I do is good. And I paint just to make just the smiles on the people's reaction when they receive the gift that I paint them.
Yeah.
You know, just to see a little kid, it might be 4 or 5 years old, and he'll see a Spider-Man hat with their name on it. And he go, oh, wow. You know, like that to me is the biggest buzz. That you can't beat that experience.
Yeah. And it never goes away. No matter how long airbrushing been around, you still get that
same vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you must get it all the time. You're doing all those baseball helmets. Those kids must be blown away when they see something
It's crazy. It doesn't lose its luster. As much as people like try to not downgrade it, but say that it's going out of style, it never really does.
It can't go out of style. They may grow out of it, but then you've got your next generation that come along.
Yeah. It's the next set of people. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Like I've been doing it for 17 years professionally, the airbrush hats at from show to shows. And you know, it makes you feel old. Little kids were probably 8 or 10 years old. They'll come back, you know, with their children. They say, "You used to paint my hats." And I go, "Really?"
Yeah, I got that today. You're making me feel old. I was a kid when my mom used to bring me here. I'm like, what?
Oh. It's amazing.
Hey, so 4 minutes. I'm gonna tell you that. Have you ever thought about making a DVD or streaming video or classes over there in Australia?
There's one thing that people don't know about me. I'm a really shy type of person. Like, I don't like to be filmed at all. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. It just makes me feel. I feel like when I get filmed, I feel like I'm not painting at my best. I just feel like there's something there, and yeah. But I mean, I have taught here in Australia, but there's not a big demand for what I do here. If you understand what I'm saying, like. When you tell parents that, hey, you want your kid to do a graffiti hat, they think graffiti is a bad thing. You know, like they don't consider it as an art form. They consider it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, they kind of consider it as, hey, this is not good. You know, I don't want my kids doing graffiti, you know. Well, it's airbrush graffiti. It's not really graffiti on walls. It's more graffiti on hats and custom artwork. But, I mean, they don't see it that way. So, I mean... I do have other people that help me out airbrush. I mean, there are other people that, you know, at times I even buy from because I run out of stock. I might do a big gig, you know, and I'll know a guy that paints not far from me. And I say, listen, you got any hats you want to offload to me? I'm more than happy to pay for them. And I'll buy his hats and I'll sell them at the shows just to, you know, keep up with demand.
Yeah. That was another question. How do y'all get y'all supplies? You have a place over there, or you have to have everything shipped over here?
Yeah, with my branded hats, I've got a supplier here, but they specialize in putting my, you know, my embossed embroidery named business logos inside the hat. But it all comes from China.
Okay.
Pretty much like anything.
That's easy access for you over there.
I mean, it's not easy. Nothing's ever easy. I had to do a lot of legwork to get to, you know, the type of hat that I want and the quality of type, you know, the quality must be there with my hats. Otherwise, I don't sell them.
Yeah.
Because I could pick up cheap type hats and, you know, people just automatically know that what's a cheap hat and what's a good hat here in Australia. You can't fool them.
And it's your quality. It's your name attached to it.
Exactly. And you know, everything that I have, it's branded, it's got my name on it, it's got my, you know, the little swing tag at the back of the hat with my logo. I just, you know, because like you said, there is competition now and they use the cheaper hats and they don't do the work that I do on the hats. And you know, I don't want to be recognized, you know, and put in the same group as them. So you know, I want to be separated.
Yeah, make you stand out more.
It's not that I got an ego or anything, but I mean,
I mean, you have to. You have to have an ego. You have to.
I mean, it just, you know, like the quality of work, when they're charging the same price as I'm charging for a hat and then using cheaper hats and the quality is not there, you know, you have to let these people know, you know, my customers. I mean, I never degrade anyone with their style of hat, but I mean, when they're using a, you know, 50 cent to a dollar hat and I'm spending $3 to $4 on a hat, you know, it's, you know, yeah, I've got to point that out.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously, our prices are a lot different than America because, you know, we don't get the higher end quality hats at cheaper prices here. Our prices are pretty dear.
Oh wow! I guess
something in America when I was there, your I think it's called Yupong brand, the snapbacks. Jonathan had them at his store. I think he was getting them for like $2 at that time. I'm not sure. It was about $2. Something like that here is like $10 wholesale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a big difference. So that's why I had to invest in getting my own hats and my own branded hats and, you know, keeping the costs low.
Yeah, because over here we can like get like, yeah, like you said, hats for like $2. A dozen for 24, so it's like, and they have like, they ship them to you quick. Like, I got a wholesale place over here in Houston. Well, I live in Houston, and they're in Dallas, and they'll ship it to you next day.
Yeah, with my hats, because they're branded, I have to order them like an indent range, and it takes about 8 to 9 weeks to get here. But when I order them, I order by the thousands. Like, I might order, you know, 5,000 hats, and that might run through me. I might be able to use that throughout the whole year. And then if I run short on hats, that's when I'll buy just the regular hats just to keep me going till I get my next set in.
Yeah. Man, that's crazy, though.
Yeah, the difference in pricing, like even paints, like, you know, buying paint here in Australia is really expensive compared to buying stuff in America because, you know, we just pay so much more for paints, you know, equipment, like airbrushes. I mean, even though I've got a lot of tools, I mean, throughout the years, I've paid a lot of money and invested a lot of money into my tools and the paints that I've bought. So, yeah, that's one of the downfalls with airbrushing here, I guess. I mean, the expense-wise.
Yeah.
But we saw...
He was telling me about what were we talking about, the prices of your stuff. Anyway,
just in equipment in general in Australia. I mean, we pay a lot more than you would in the US. I mean, I sometimes look at the stuff that you can get, like even paint brands. You know, we don't have that sort of, like, you've got Aquaflow. We don't have Aquaflow here. I mean, all we have is pretty much Createx, and I've been getting my ETAC paints through Chino, which is a bonus because I love using that paint. But before that, I was just using Wicked paints by Createx. I mean, and the fluorescent type transparent paints through Createx as well.
Yeah, that was a question I was going to ask you about. What paint do you use? Is it a hassle as far as like getting your paints and stuff?
No, there's no hassle. We've got a distributor here in another part of another state in Australia. He's in South Australia. He's an online store, and you can get, you know, all your paints through him and all your equipment and stuff. It just I mean, although he gives me good rates, it's still an expense. It does get a bit expensive when you're trying to use paint. Because I don't buy little bottles of paint. I buy the bigger, you know, the 32-ounce bottles because I run through a lot of paint. So
Yeah.
I mean, compared to what I was getting paint for in America, to, you know, if you convert it to Australia, you're like, it's like 5 times dearer.
Man, when you came here, you should have made. I'm pretty sure you probably made groceries. I didn't get everything.
I wanted to, like, because at the getaway at the end of the class, they were just giving away the paint to the students, and they go, "Oh, why are you taking that?" And I go, "Oh, because I've got weight issues, you know, to bring back home." So all I had was like little, you know, the 25 mil or 50 mil bottle of paint to bring back.
Man, but, I'm gonna try to load up. Like, man, I'll take a whole nother suitcase with me.
The students, they were loading up hard. Like, I mean, their bags were full of paints. I mean, which is a good thing because they get to use the paint and, you know, get the practice in, and which was, I thought was really good because that would never happen here in Australia. There's no way they'll give out paint like that. It just wouldn't happen.
No, especially if it's so hard to get and expensive like that.
Well, that thing got open up a shop here selling the paint.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a great idea.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you could add that to your repertoire of your business. You just wholesale.
That's just another thing of retail. Like, I just don't want to get involved in. I mean, I tried before when I had a shop, like selling paint, but I mean, then I got to put the prices on and they're going, that guy's too expensive. Why do you go to this guy? I mean, it's something I just want. It's just another headache you don't want.
Yeah.
Unless you want to open up a retail store and sell your paints and, you know, sell your inks and sell your equipment, that's fine. But for me, nah, I just stick to painting. I'm more happy with painting.
Yeah. I mean, you're making good. You're doing good just with what you're doing. So do you do a lot of events?
I do. I mean, that's what keeps me going. I've got one coming up in April, which is our Easter show, and that's a 12-day show, and that's 12 days straight from 9 till 9 at night. So I'm doing like 12 to 14 hours a day there. That's one of my bigger shows that I do. But I mean, I do events that take me, you know, from state to state, and they're like your Comic Cons, and we have another one called Supernova, as well as little shopping center gigs throughout school holidays and Christmas trade. I do, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like any business, you know. You can't stay in the one area with this type of work here because there's just not enough income to keep you afloat in one area. You have to move around.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed with airbrushing in Australia. Like, you just can't stay stagnant in one area. I mean, I did that for a long time, but after a while it just becomes like, I can get that next week, or I can buy that. He's always here, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. I used to be very into like doing outside events and parties and stuff like that, but I gave it up.
No, I don't know why. Cause I remember seeing you in that red truck.
Yeah, so I'm starting to back the pick. I sold my truck, man. I hate I sold it. But
did you sell that?
Get rid of it. Yeah, I sold it maybe a year or two ago because I wanted to switch over to a van. But
right.
I just haven't been able to find a van that I want. And every van I found, it went from, it was like $35,000. I'm like, man, I don't want to pay $35,000.
That's like double here. That's like 70,000 here.
Yeah. So I have a bunch of different businesses. So I want a van. I wanted to downgrade from the big red truck to the van, but
yeah,
I'm still looking for one.
Well, but, I mean, I just finished an event in Canberra, which is our state capital here in Australia. That was just a little royal show, but it was only a 3-day event. And I've got like a marquee. You know, those sort of portable tents.
Yeah.
And we had an absolute blinder. Like, it was just, you know, the hats were just going out left, right, and center Friday, Saturday. And then come Sunday, I had a big gush of wind and it almost took my tent.
Oh, wow.
So I had, the funny thing was, I had customers holding each leg where it, you know, it stands up on each end of the stand. And I had customers holding the hats, they were flying off the tables. Oh, it was a nightmare, so I have to work on something to next time if I ever get caught in the wind. I have to work out something to keep these things in place.
Yeah, I think once the wind get underneath it, man, it's hell.
Yeah, it was like a kite. Like the tent almost flew away, and I had weights like 20 liter drums on each end of the tent. But oh wow, it was just an experience. We had to close early, unfortunately. Like, it was a 9 to 6 event on the last day of the show. I only got till 1 o'clock. So, and I was absolutely cranking. Like, I was a machine. The hats were going out you know, left, right, and center until the wins came.
Yeah, it always will mess you up.
That's what I was going to ask you. How do you cope with the wind if you're doing it? You know, you're doing your softball helmets or baseball helmets. What do?
We have little stakes that we put in the ground, but I mean, if the wind gets underneath it, it's not really much you could do. You just try to hold on to it because you don't want to hit anybody.
Oh,
you know. Yeah. So I have one coming up this weekend. I'm actually really starting to try to get back out because I kind of like. At the point where I'm ready to retire, I'm ready to, like, I got maybe 3 more years. I said I want to give it 3 to 4 more years and I want to retire. So I'm trying to do as much events and stuff that I want to do before I start. I'm sorry, we almost there.
Yeah, no hurry. Like you said, we got all night.
Yeah, I got a couple more questions. Okay, so yeah, like, I'm ready to move on to something different. So, I'm in my last couple of years. But so the reason I started the podcast a couple of years ago was to help everybody who's during COVID, because everybody was doing something different to keep, keep their business going. What did you do during COVID?
Funny thing you say that. When I was doing the Comic-Con events, I noticed that the events were bringing, like, retailers were bringing in face masks. So just before COVID hit, I ordered some face masks. This was not, I didn't know there was going to be such a thing like COVID. And, you know, I didn't think we're ever going to be shut down. But just before COVID hit us in March, before our lockdowns happened, a month or two, I ordered some masks from China. And I ordered like 150 pieces of masks, white masks, plain white ones, just to airbrush on. Lucky enough that... that order came through, then we went into lockdown and we could not, you know, for 6 months, we couldn't move out, you know, like the world, we couldn't leave our homes. And the only source of income was selling my masks through Facebook and social media. And I was just like in the garage, just painting masks all day, all night, just to keep up with orders, like, and as well as taking other orders online. That's probably what got me through. And then we went into lockdown. We went into lockdown twice here in Australia and in Sydney anyway. And obviously we had help from the government because, you know, we couldn't work. I couldn't work anyway. So, we had help like everyone else has help from the government just to keep you afloat until we get back into the routine. So that's kind of what kept me going. If it wasn't for that, I really didn't know what I was going to do. If we were going to be in lockdown forever, who knows, you know, like.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was scary. It was like, you know, like we couldn't leave our homes. Literally, we couldn't go only for, you know, essential things, which was like your food and, you know, your bread, your water, whatever you wanted to get from the shops. And that was it, straight back home. If you didn't apply, you'd get a $5,000 fine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, our policing was, like, literally fining people, you know. It got to a point where I was going, man, if life's going to be like this, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do.
Man, it was crazy. But you know what? Everybody being confined to their homes and getting all this money from the government, it was like everybody was itching to spend their money.
Well, I mean, the same thing here, but I sort of worked it out. Like I had about 3 or 4 months. All my events got cancelled. So for that year of 2020, it was gone. Like everything got cancelled, and we didn't get reimbursed for all the gigs that we paid. But it sort of flowed on to the next year's show. So what I did, okay, if I was in lockdown, I painted hats. I still kept on making pre-made stock. And then when I got to the show, it made life easier. I had a ton of stock to sell. And when I did my main gigs and I did the shows, I wasn't stressed. Like, normally I used to stress because every show I go to, I sell out. And I come to a gig and I got hardly any stock and all. Did I get to the part where I was just painting stock? Or?
Yeah, you were talking about painting stock.
Basically, when we went into shutdown and lockdown, I just kept painting stock and it just helped me towards the next the following year's show, I made sure I had enough supply, you know, to keep me going. And that's what kept me sane, because if I didn't paint, I would have felt like I had nothing to do, you know, like other than watch Netflix and watch TV.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it probably would have made you stir crazy without having to, like...
Yeah, and I just thought, wow, how can I be more creative? So I started painting the face mask, which I had, you know, had a numerous... Because Melbourne, another state in Australia, went into lockdown for almost 2 years. So they were heavily buying face masks off me, and I was shipping them down to them. And, you know, they kept me going for about 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. When I first started, like I said, I was doing a podcast, and it was like you could hear everybody. Like, everybody had a different story about how they were surviving. And it's basically kind of like the same thing. Everybody was, like, doing, like, painting masks and painting masks. And...
Yeah. The good thing about, I guess, social media was then, that was the only time that I felt like my social media, like people buying things off social media, had really worked. Because, you know, every time I went to a gig or if I do an event, I always, you know, make sure they know about us and like our page and follow us. Because without Facebook, at that time, my Facebook page, my Airbrush Tats and Caps Facebook page, a lot of the people that bought were from my Facebook followers. So I was kind of blessed in that way. People were ordering face masks through my Facebook page. Are you there?
Yeah. And yeah, I think I did a lot of sales off of my Facebook page, but they would allow us to go into the mall. They will allow us to go in and, like, you know, mess around in our shops.
And so I would go up there. You could go into your mall?
Yeah. I had made the decision I was going to close then. Yeah. So I would go up to the mall and I would actually, I caught COVID. And
I've caught it twice. I even had it in January.
Yeah. They don't even really talk about it anymore. But I caught it, and I would go to work, and by the time I would walk from the car to the inside the shop, I had to rest for like an hour before I did anything, because I was wore out.
It's the worst trying to work with it. It's just like, oh, I was trying to work with it through January because I was doing a shopping center, but I caught it. I had to get my colleague to go in and work for me because, like, I just couldn't work. Like, it just got to a
point. Yeah, it drains you. And it was crazy.
It drains me. My throat was sore. I couldn't stop coughing, and I didn't want to pass it on to anyone. And especially the elderly during Christmas time, you know.
Oh, like, man.
Yeah, you just don't want to have that on your conscience.
No. You know what saved us? I have a media room in my house. So we would come in the back and we watch Gordon Ramsay. We would sit a certain time of the day.
Yeah.
Everything was shut down. We would come in the back. We watch Gordon Ramsay. Hell's Kitchen. And we would, and when we got better and everything opened back up, the first thing we did was went to Vegas to Gordon Ramsay restaurant.
Yeah, I seen that when I was there.
Yeah. And that's what we did. We went straight over there.
Oh, that's funny.
We were like, man, we want this because we saw this on the show. We want this because we saw it on the show. But it was crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's something I'd never want to happen again, though.
No.
It just, like...
And now it's oblivious. Nobody really talks about it anymore.
No, it's just like it's never happened, you know? Like,
yeah. The world is back open.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're back open. At least we can paint and... You know, do what we love.
Yeah. So, do you always offer T-shirts when you do it to you at your events, or it's just hats?
I don't actually spray T-shirts because I find that if I try and do both, I'll do a lot less work. If you know what I mean, like, because I'm only an artist, I'm the only one that's painting there, and if I paint hats, I know I can make a quicker profit at a quicker time than I could painting a shirt.
Yeah.
And then when I fly to these interstate gigs, shirts would weigh a lot more than they would hats, if you understand what I mean. Because I fly with my luggage, and we take on a certain amount of kilos with us, and that keeps the weight down. So I know how much I can take with on the plane, not having T-shirts. I do have some shirts, but they're pre-pressed vinyl ones, vinyl print type shirts that I do bring if I do shirts.
Okay, because I seen a couple of pictures. I guess they were like maybe ordered shirts or whatever. That
yeah, any of the hats, T-shirts or hoodies, they're probably ordered shirts through my social media pages. And I'll airbrush them at, you know, in my home studio. Then I'll post them out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause I see you with shirts and they had that match.
Yeah. That's when they, you know, it might be Christmas time or it could be, just a normal order through social media or through my website. And they're just sort of custom ones where I paint at home and then I'll ship them out.
Yeah.
Cause all my work is done from home. I don't have I don't work from a shop. I actually work from home, and then I'll go to the events to do my airbrushing there, which I like because it's kind of like doing a tour. I feel like an artist then, like a rock star.
Yeah.
It's the only time we get to expose ourselves as artists, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. True story.
So everyone looks forward to seeing us when we go to paint there, right?
It's the show. I always feel it's the show.
Yeah, I'm a funny type painter. I'll paint like when I'm at home, I'll just paint at my own will. But when I'm at a show, I'm just sort of like, I don't know, something comes out of me where it's like I feel like, you know, like I'm a monster. I just got to get things done, and I sort of flourish, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
the inner artist comes out, and all the talent, you know, shows in your work when you're at the shows. But when you're at home, you know, you've got no one to really express that to other than yourself.
And you just, it's like business as usual.
Yeah, exactly. So, but when you get to the show, you're the superstar of that show. So you got to be a superstar.
Everybody's watching you in.
Yeah, like, you know.
The extra moves in. That's crazy.
You do a little bit more flamboyant things, I guess.
Yeah. That's the word I was gonna use, but I didn't really want to say like a little bit more flamboyant, which is with the way your lines a little bit, your dagger strokes is a little different.
Yeah, yeah, like it's more
because it's the show. It's the show. They get excited and they're watching you, and it just makes it just more better for them.
It's a spectacle, you know. They gotta watch you paint, and you gotta have fun while you paint, and you enjoy what you're doing. So you know, you gotta be a little bit of a show off, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
you know, like
for you.
You can be humble, but you know, there's a point where sometimes you got to show your talent. So, and yeah. that's where the talent comes out when you're at the shows for me, anyway.
Yeah, and you do a normal move, and you know, your normal little stroke, like ooh.
I'll do a thin to thick line, then I'll flare it out.
Yeah, they're like, oh, did you see that?
Yeah. Oh, you got me cracking up. You're funny.
Yeah, that's crazy, because that's real. That's an artist. That's us. You know.
And then you have your partner behind you saying, "Hey, what are you doing? Look, you don't do that at home."
Yeah.
What's going on here?
But you got that crowd around you, and everybody's watching you.
Yeah, it's funny. It amazes me till this day. Like when someone sees you painting for the first time, you'll be doing something that you do all the time, like a basic line or. Just a little star, you know, with a little starburst on a hat. And they go, oh, wow.
They'd be so amazing.
Did you see him do that line? Did you see him do that star? That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you just take, you know, sometimes you take things that like that for granted. But then you go, hey, man, that's what I trained to do, you know. Like I'm trained to impress people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And you know what? We're all from different places, different. Everything, but we all have the same experiences.
Exactly. Like, you know, you experienced it, I've experienced it. And it's funny, like you said, we're from different parts of the world. And, you know, with airbrushing, that's the type of experience you get. You know, that's the only time you get to flourish. is when you're at a gig and people get to see you. I'm sure you get it because you're painting like live on site doing those baseball helmets. That must be mind-blowing to see someone paint, you know. And that's what drew me into airbrushing. I mean, to see someone paint something from nothing, it just amazes me.
Yeah, you make something from nothing and they're just in awe.
Yeah, that's the wow factor for me. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and it makes it so great in the end when you give it to them. They're like, "Oh my god!" It's like,
yeah. But to yourself, you're probably saying, "Hey, you know, I've done a lot better than that one." But you just keep going. Next customer.
All right, next, let's go.
Yeah,
man, that's crazy. We all have that same thought process, dude.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Man, so, oh man, we did 11 minutes.
Yeah, that was a record.
Yeah.
So, 11 okay. minutes of airbrushing with our with our mouths.
Hey, we were all just geeking each other up with the show.
Yeah.
Hey, so funny. So you do tattoos now.
Yeah, actually, let me tell you a little story. I'll try and keep it quick. When I first started the airbrush tats and caps business, I actually started with the airbrush temporary tattoos.
Oh, cool.
So at that time, are we back?
Yeah, we dropped quicker that time.
Well, let's hurry up. We've got 5 seconds.
Okay, good.
I started when I first started doing the airbrushing before I became a type of business. I actually started with the airbrush temporary tattoos. And I was just spraying airbrush tattoos. And at that time, it wasn't popular. I mean, like, it was pop tattoos.
You were telling me that you started your business, started doing tattoos.
Yeah, I started the business doing the airbrush temporary tattoos. And then I'll tell you a little story.
Okay, I rebooted the whole thing and see if it works.
Okay, all right. So, yes, I was doing temporary tattoos. And I had a good run for a few years with doing those tattoos. I was making a lot of money on them. And at that time, I had a few trucker hats hanging in my store. But I used to spray the this is how it became to do the graffiti hats. I used to spray the temporary tattoos on the hat. Yeah, I started doing the I just had a handful of trucker hats with you know, at that time dragons were popular and I was spraying little dragons, and at that time my son was little and he wanted a hat with the dragon. I hung his hat up on the wall.
You hung the hats with the dragons?
I hung a hat with my son's dragon on the wall, and then a dear friend of mine, my high school, my best friend, which I've known for 35 years, and he's known me since my school days of doing graffiti in my book pages and stuff. He comes into his shop with the...
Fuck!
Yeah, initially I started doing the temporary tattoos for the first couple of years before I actually started doing the hats.
I guess we still had the same problem.
That's okay, but we got 6 minutes in.
Yeah. So what do you do besides, what do you do besides airbrushing? Do you have any hobbies or anything?
I like to, I like to get out and do a little bit of fishing, a bit of adventurous stuff. I like sightseeing. I like going on holidays. I like seeing other countries. If it wasn't for airbrushing, I don't mind seeing other parts of the world that I haven't seen before. Traveling is really good. Yeah, I like to travel. But yeah, fishing, I'd say fishing is good as well. That's pretty much it, you know, other than, you know, music and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's I think the airbrushing has allowed us, it gave us the finances to move, to see more things, you know. Like, I like to go visit other artists when I go out.
Yeah, that's another thing. I love, like, I was just in Bali a few weeks back and in Indonesia, and they have a lot of airbrush things as well in Bali. Like, whenever I travel, I try and pick up something from another country that I'm, you know, to bring back home that is airbrushed.
Uh-huh.
So they had like miniature surfboards with like sort of beach scenes and waves on them. I always buy a piece of art, no matter what it is, but it's got to have something to do with airbrushing. So, whether it's from another artist or if it's from another place in the world, I'd love to buy, you know, I love buying pieces of a little bit of piece of art from that country.
Yeah, I like to get a lot of caricatures of myself from other caricature artists.
Oh,
I do that. Whenever I go out, I'll find caricature artists and I'll get one done.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew a good friend back in the 90s. His name is Paul Tresnan. He was a fantastic caricature airbrush artist. And I'll send you a photo of what he did for me. He painted basically I wanted something for my logo, but it never ended up evolving into it because it was so detailed. But I'll send you a picture of that caricature that I got from him. It's amazing.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I like to see that. Because I like to see, like in my office at first, I had like a whole wall just full of caricatures of other artists that's done for me.
Well, maybe we need to do an exchange. I need to knock you up a hat and you can do me. I'll send you a better image of myself holding an airbrush and we can do an exchange.
Yeah, we can do that. I'd love to have one of your hats.
Yeah, man, I'd be more than honored.
Man, I would be honored. I'd put it in my office.
Cut it out. You're so good.
So I mean, well, I guess I'll could get all this put back together tonight or tomorrow, and I'll try to get it posted tomorrow.
Yeah,
and I'll send you a copy of it as soon as I'm finished.
Oh, absolutely, I love that. And a lot of people been asking me, hey, when's that podcast? We want to listen to it. We halfway through it.
Yeah,
we just had to finish up the ending today.
Yeah, we kept running into little stumbles, but hey, we finally got it done.
Nah, that's good. I appreciate you having me on your podcast. It means a lot to me, and I look forward to listening to you to the up and coming podcast as well.
Oh yeah, I appreciate it. I was really honored that you said yes to do it. I was like, man. So I know I get a lot of listeners now because everybody want to know, you know, your story.
Yeah. But
hey,
you're back.
Yeah, you were saying something?
I was just saying that we were meant to do this podcast a while back, but it never fell through. So I'm glad we got to get it. I'm glad we got to get it to happen this time. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, because sometimes I'll fall off or I'll get busy and then I'm like, it's hard for me to catch back up because, you know, I'm still running my shop and then I'm still doing events and outside. So, and then I'm doing everything myself. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of hard.
I understand. One man show does everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're kind of like me. I do it all as well. You know, I do a lot of organizing events and, you know, getting out there and do the shows. It's hard work. And a lot of people don't see that in the, you know, what happens in the background of the industry. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, I appreciate you having me on your podcast. If you're going to have another one, I'm more than happy to, you know, be involved with it.
Normally I do like little sub ones, like, we'll talk about like parties, or we'll talk about like, I don't know, just different things in general that has to do with the business. So yeah. I would like to get you back on your expertise on some things.
Absolutely. I'll be more than happy to, you know, be involved with that sort of thing as well. You know, plus it's getting to know other artists. I mean, listening to your podcast, like it's when I go and paint in the garage, I'll actually put on a podcast to listen to while I'm painting. Just to see what's going on with the other artists in the world.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, it just keeps things interesting, you know, like keeps me alert with what's happening and what's going on. And it's good to hear their stories on airbrushing as well.
Yeah, you know what was strange to me in the beginning? It was the fact that a lot of us have the same beginnings, like, you know, how we all started out, like, you know, self-taught. You know, it was like, that's what I like to listen to, like hear everybody's story, how they started.
Absolutely. You know, like it's different for us older artists that started early in the 80s or 90s compared to the artists that start now, because they got sort of pretty much everything handed to them through, you know, social media, through YouTube and all that sort of thing. So it's a different era in airbrushing, but it's, you know, I'm sure they like to hear about our stories and how we evolve with our airbrushing as well.
Yeah. You know, some good ones. I don't know if you listen to them, but Pat and Tom Davidson, you know, the beginners who told, you know, they told their stories of how it actually really started, which is great listens.
Yeah, no, I always listen to them. I mean, like, I'm big fans of their work and the industry they've created. And I'm actually good friends with Pat and Tom. I know through social media, but I mean, he's a good friend of mine. I consider him a friend through social media. So one day, hopefully, I get to meet you all. You know, I mean, I'd love to, you know, I've never been to Texas. If I get a chance, maybe I'll get out that way.
All right, good. I'll be glad to see you.
Yeah, likewise.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, Ralph. You have a good day, mate. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Air Graphic Podcast is a production of Air Graphics Airbrushing. It's written and hosted by me, fellow airbrusher Ralph Kelly. If you want to see any of my work, check out my website, www.airgraphics1.com, or my Facebook, Ralph Kelly. Thanks for listening.